Welcome to Infinite Consciousness This Week, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and if you have a newborn baby, or if you're about to have one, or you want to have one, you need to listen to what my guest has to say tonight. Her name's Shoshana Bennett, and she's a doctor that's written a book called Postpartum Depression for Dummies. How are you, Shoshana?
Very well. Thank you, Eva.
Thanks for coming on. You've got a great topic to talk about.
It's a juicy one. Yep.
It is. I learned a lot reading this book.
Good.
It made me think back through my life, because I've had significant issues with depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about it. I never had them until I had my first child.
Yes, that's very common, by the way.
And I had still not fully gotten rid of them, but it made me realize that's when it started. And I was 25 when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get started in all this, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Sure. You know, I was a special education teacher when I was expecting my first child, and I wasn't a therapist. And everything was going beautifully. I mean, marriage was great, house was great, job was great, pregnancy was wonderful. But as soon as I delivered, Eva, I knew that there was something very, very wrong. I was having feelings I didn't think any mom should have, and I wasn't having feelings that I thought I ought to be having. It was really doom and gloom, and my anxiety was really through the roof. I was very obsessive, hopeless, really. I thought my life was over. And no one knew what this was or what was wrong with me. And a number of months into this depression, I saw my OB, and I said to my OB, if life's going to be like this, I don't want to be here anymore. And, you know, I was actually feeling suicidal at the time. And he mistook this for the baby blues. He said, oh, all new moms feel this way. Shoshana, go home and do something nice for yourself, and it'll pass. And I thought, well, if this is normal, then clearly I wasn't meant to be a mother, and my husband and my baby would certainly be better off without me. So, you know, I went through 2.5 years. I missed the toddlerhood and infancy of my firstborn entirely. It was one big nightmare. And then I slowly became, I started coming back to myself. I started seeing in color again instead of in shades of gray. And I started enjoying again, and I started tasting my food. My hair started to curl. I mean, clearly my chemistry was returning. And we had another baby. And, of course, even though the pregnancy had gone great, I plummeted again down to the bottom of that well.
Here. How did you get better? You just gradually got better, or did you do something?
You know, it was a year into my second depression that I learned that there was a name for this and that my family and I had not needed to suffer the way we had. And I started reading everything I could get my hands on from all over the world. And I realized, first of all, that the United States was far behind, light years behind of some other countries in the world as far as the assessment and treatment of postpartum depression.
Interesting.
And I started pioneering California. There was no help there. And slowly but surely did what I needed to do and spoke to the people I needed to speak with and regained my old self back. But it was years. I founded Postpartum Assistance for Mothers back in 1987 and went on to be the president of the California State organization, and more recently, I'm the immediate past president of Postpartum Support International, our international organization, and then became, licensed as a. I got a second master's and a PhD, and then got licensed as a clinical psychologist. And this is the passion. This is my passion, so that moms will not need to suffer the way I did.
That's amazing. You know, Brooke Shields certainly made a big issue about that. It's real. It really is real.
Quite real. And, you know, it although it has some resemblances to depressions of other types, postpartum depression really feels different. And I think Brooke Shields did a beautiful job and a very courageous step it was in coming forward. Postpartum depression feels like we're all over the map with our moods. I mean, at 10 in the morning, we might feel anxious. At noon, we might feel almost normal. At 2 p.m., we might feel like, very, very depressed. Because the endocrine system, our hormones and glands, are involved in ways that they're not at other times in our lives. And Brooke Shields did a good job also describing that.
That's one of my next questions. I'd like for you to cover the physiology of it, if you would. Why it happens. So for people who don't have access to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, over here in Georgia where I am or somewhere, what they can look up for, you know, what they can look to on the Internet or what they can talk to their doctor about. So can we talk about the specifics behind the physiological symptoms?
Sure. You actually asked a couple of really good questions. I am very accessible no matter where a woman lives. I work exclusively by phone. If they have a computer, we can do a webcam as well, if they want to wave and say hi. I do that because I travel so much, and I'm really all over the world training medical professionals and mental health professionals and the public about these disorders. So anyone can give me a call on the phone or email me. And my website is drshosh.com. drshosh.com. The physiology, Eva, I'm not skirting your question, but I just wanted to let you know there's research going on as we speak as far as what specifically is going on with the hypothalamus, with the pituitary, you know, with the endocrine system, with the brain physiology. We certainly have a pretty good guess that postpartum depression, generally speaking, is physical in etiology, that when the reproductive hormones, estrogen and progesterone especially, drop precipitously in the first 48 hours after delivery, it affects the neurotransmitters in the brain. Serotonin being one of the most important of the neurotransmitters or brain chemicals that control mood. And for 15% of us, that's about 1 in 7. That's a high statistic.
Mm-hmm.
We experience something more severe than the very normal baby blues.
Listen, I can relate to you because I told you this afternoon that I was going to read your book this evening, and I did. And when I started reading that book and the symptoms about the difference between baby blues and postpartum depression,
mm-hmm.
it made me go back 22 years to when my first child was born. And not too long after that, some things started happening, and I too got suicidal.
Oh.
And I got that way after each one of my children. But it would last for a while.
Yes.
And it was horrible.
Yes.
Really, it was horrible. And so, but I never associated it with having a baby until tonight when I read your book.
Wow. Wow, that's a big light bulb that went off for
you.
Yeah,
really was. It really, I was kind of shocked, and I thought, well, I don't have anything else that it could have been. It had to be that.
Yes, yes. And, you know, until just a few years ago, doctors and other health professionals were thinking that it was just a coincidence. Oh, you just happened to, you know, feel this awful, but it has nothing to do with the fact that you just had a baby. And so no one was pointing this out to us. But now we know it is very, very clear that it is no coincidence at all. This is extremely common. We're at our most vulnerable to mood disorders, such as depression,
mm-hmm.
after the birth of a child.
I actually remember I was asking about Gottfried Kellerman and neurosciences.
Yes, uh-huh.
He actually ran one of those tests on me so we could talk about it on my show. And that was what was wrong. I had significantly low levels of serotonin.
Well, there we go.
But I wanted to know, how would you know whether it was serotonin or dopamine?
How would I personally know?
Yeah, I mean, how would you feel comfortable getting somebody to get on one of those drugs? How would they know it was not dopamine?
Well,
is it always serotonin?
It is usually. It is very individual, but generally speaking, postpartum depression is serotonin dependent.
Okay.
So, and also the clusters of symptoms that that almost always present themselves in some way or another, in some level of severity or another, they're they all signify low serotonin. For instance, insomnia or sleep problems, appetite problems, lethargy, a feeling of overwhelm is very significantly tied in with a low serotonin. And almost always the women who call me feel overwhelmed with even the most simplest of tasks that used to be just mm-hmm. so easy for them, and it mm-hmm. just used to roll off their back. Suddenly everything feels difficult. That just reeks of low serotonin.
Okay, that's a good answer, a good clear answer anyway. So I want to ask you a couple of questions here. So don't answer yet, but I want to talk about what can be done about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get through, I want to make sure that we cover the topic of estrogen dominance afterwards, okay? I don't want to let you forget. Look, I don't want to forget about that. So what can, you know, I don't really like laboratory pharmaceuticals, but I think particularly in this instance when suicidal ideations come into play, that you may have to have them to tide you over, and that it's okay and to do that thing. But so could you talk about that, and also talk about how you would advise somebody on alternative medicine or supplements?
Sure, I'd be glad to. You know, I'm not a lover of the pharmaceutical companies. I have to be honest here. I mean, I'm not completely anti-medication, and I agree with you, Eva, that there's a time and a place to appropriately use an antidepressant, for instance. Certainly if a woman is in crisis and she's unable to even sit still long enough to absorb the kind of therapy that I can give her, or some other natural healing method, she might temporarily need to be on an antidepressant. But I want your listeners to know that it is very rare that a woman feels that she needs to stay on one. If she really has a solid plan of action, looking at her whole life, I mean, taking a look at the sleep, taking a look at the her nutrition and the education and the emotional support and physical support and, you know, all these other things that go into a solid wellness plan, very rarely does she need to stay on a medication. And often women are afraid to come forward. You know, they're afraid to say, I think there's something wrong, because they think they're going to be stuck on an antidepressant and then get hooked on it and never be able to wean off.
Right.
And I really want folks to know that that's not necessarily it at all. You know, I've helped at this point over 15,000 women recover. This is a very treatable disorder, very treatable, and it's even preventable, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But I want folks to know that typically, if pharmaceuticals need to be used at the beginning and they can be helpful with the severe symptoms, they're usually quite temporary.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, it's dangerous. Pharmaceuticals can be dangerous, especially if you come off those things abruptly, which is what I did one time.
No, absolutely.
And
it is a commitment
awful.
To me. Once you start it, and, you know, it can certainly be helpful at those appropriate times, one needs to take it responsibly. You need to be working with a medical professional who can dose properly and monitor you properly. And then when you're ready to wean off, you need to wean off, you know,
gradually,
the proper rate, or else you can relapse, yes.
Mm-hmm. Get suicidal, terrible, it's awful. So,
yeah, it needs to be handled carefully. But again, it can be a very good thing when it's used at the right time and when somebody is appropriately, you know, dosing and monitoring.
If you're recommending a prescription to one of your clients, what would you recommend for serotonin levels?
You know, I would certainly also want to make it clear that I don't give medical advice per se. I'm a psychologist, not a psychiatrist. I do, however, train psychiatrists, because I know the literature very, very well. The docs now are calling me, you know, the OBs and some of the psychiatrists going, what do you think she needs and how much? But I cannot cross that line and give medical advice. I can tell you, though, that the psychiatrists I work the closest with, and those hundreds of psychiatrists who have been polled as far as what they use as the first line of treatment if a medication needs to be part. It is an SSRI. It is a serotonin called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. So Zoloft, Prozac, Paxil, that type of medication is usually the first one that's tried.
Okay. So is there one of those that the psychiatrists have found work better than others?
The answer to the general answer to that, Eva, is no. There is not one drug that is better than the next. It is very individual. The rule of thumb is that you need to use what works, and it depends on the woman's chemistry. For instance, if she's been on an antidepressant before that has worked well for her, this is not the time. You know, when she has a newborn and she has all these other responsibilities and there's bonding that you want to have happen, it's not the time to start experimenting with various medications. You put her on the one that works, that she has a history with. Or if she hasn't been on one, if a blood relative has had a good response to one of the medications, that is the way to go. Yeah, but if she's never been on an antidepressant and it looks like she needs something to start her, you know, to help her at least get through the initial crisis, I know Zoloft has quite a few bits of research behind it. It tends to be the one that is tried often first. We have some information regarding the safety with lactation and Zoloft. So, but again, there isn't one medication that is seen to be better than the others. You just sometimes it takes some experimentation, right. And we want her well. We want her 100%.
Now, I know that some of those things can take, you know, 30 to 60 days to start working.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be worth their time to get some neurotransmitter tests like Dr. Kellerman does?
You know,
Dr.
Kellerman does some very special, wonderful work, I know. Typically, I mean, the usual blood tests that are done usually don't give us the information that we need. In other words, they're really because the woman has no baseline data. In other words, start taking estrogen tests and, you know, take the progesterone test and take this. The only test I would always suggest for all postpartum women between 2 to 3 months postpartum is a thyroid test, because thyroiditis happens in about 10%.
Yeah, we're going to get to that
of women. But, no, I honestly don't. And I know the doctors agree with me that typically it doesn't give us enough, the traditional tests anyway, don't give us enough information.
Urine and saliva.
Oh, yeah. No, as I'm saying, he does some very, very good and more comprehensive tests that are usually done in labs. What's most important is that she starts with some kind of treatment, not necessarily medication. I mean, good sleep deprivation can lower serotonin. It changes brain chemistry. That's powerful stuff.
Yes.
So sleep is top on my list. When I help a woman with a wellness plan.
What do you tell them to do for that? Because I also had that problem, so I can relate. What would you advise somebody to do for that?
Well, I can let me tell you the pieces of a wellness plan that I always take a look at. Would you like me to talk
about
those pieces? Okay. When a woman calls me, the first thing I like to do is to give her an initial assessment. So I get a very well-rounded picture of what's happening in her life. There is no cookie-cutter approach to treating postpartum depression. Each woman is very different. So I want to find out who is on duty at nighttime with a baby. I don't believe it should only be the mother, even if she's breastfeeding. She needs some solid chunks of uninterrupted sleep, so her serotonin has a fighting chance of staying where it needs to stay, or her moods are going to plummet. So we take a look at that. And I will also talk about some alternative treatments that can be done if she's unable to sleep, even if she gets the chance. For instance, if I ask her, are you able to sleep at night when your baby's sleeping? And she says, no, my head is racing with anxious thoughts, and I'm worried about what I have to do the next day, and I can't, you know, then we're talking insomnia, and we need to get a little more aggressive with treatment. If it's just a matter of she keeps being waked up every 1 to 2 hours with a crying baby, I'll help her work out a plan so that there's someone else a partner, if she has a partner, or some other support person, so that she can get some solid chunks, even if that means she's pumping, you know, during the day so that this other person can give a bottle, so that she, you know, so she can get some solid sleep for her brain chemistry. There's nothing more important to a baby than a happy mother.
Absolutely.
Much more important than what goes in their mouth.
To the whole family.
For the whole family, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's such pressure on new mothers to breastfeed these days. And, you know, I think breastfeeding's fabulous. And if it's working for the dyad, that's wonderful, you know, for the mother and the baby and the rest of the family. It's fantastic. But, you know, again, the mother's mental health needs to be taken into account. And if she is spiraling downward, number one, her milk supply is going to diminish if she's exhausted and fatigued and if she's stressed. And it's not good for anybody. Nobody benefits if her mental health starts dropping. And pediatricians now know that. They're getting really good at checking in with the mother when the mom brings the patient, the kid, mm-hmm. into those PD appointments. The pediatricians know if they don't check in and make sure that the mother's mental health is in a good place, you know, they know they're not doing their job well. In order to make sure that the baby has, you know, is in good shape, you've got to make sure that the primary caretaker's mental health is in good shape.
Absolutely.
So, sorry, I deviated from the sleep, but I'm a big believer in solid sleep.
Well, you know what? It would seem logical to me, and I don't know, but it would seem logical that if she gets wired up, you know, it's still like the flight or fight mode,
yeah,
that she would have a lot of norepinephrine or cortisol, and that mm-hmm. would go to the baby and make it even more hyper.
Well, you know, that's very interesting, Eva. Very interesting. We know even that prenatally, a woman who is extremely anxious in pregnancy, that changes the chemicals and actually the brain chemistry of the fetus. We actually have research now to back that up. Those babies are born with very high cortisol. They're harder to soothe. I mean, it's extremely important. I mean, basically what I'm saying is anxiety and depression crosses the placenta.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
So treatment is extremely important. It's not necessarily medication that's needed, but treatment of some type or types, very important.
I think, and I hate to put this off on men, but I think that they think that the only thing that's different about us is that we're putting on some weight. They have no idea that we're basically a different person when this happens, and we need to be treated with gloves almost sometimes.
Oh, absolutely, Eva. And, you know, there's a whole chapter in Postpartum Depression for Dummies that is geared towards partners and loved ones, you know, family members. So they know specifically what to say and what not to say. And, I mean, it gives them the script. And it also educates them as to what's going on so that they can be, because often, you know, partners are, they're very well-meaning, you know, and they love their wives and girlfriends,
right.
And, you know, but they don't know what to do. They feel really helpless, and they're not understanding what's happening inside. So
it's a good book. It's easy to understand.
Good.
It's a good book.
Thank
easy
you.
To read. It really is. So let's talk about thyroid and estrogen for a few minutes. Tell me what happens there, because it, when I read this book, I realized that that changed my life, and it changed my life most probably to thyroid and estrogen problems. And I would have never have thought about that connection.
Well, again, I'm sorry you went through what you went through, and I'm so glad that the Dummies book gave you some information that helped you put the puzzle pieces together for yourself. And that I hear that quite often. Thyroid can do some interesting flip-flops postpartum. Sometimes there's hyperthyroidism. You know, the thyroid gland is going on overdrive, so to speak, and sometimes it's hypo, an underactive thyroid, and that certainly doesn't help moods any. I mean, it can really wreak havoc on moods.
What would be some indications of both of those?
Well, hypothyroid, which is actually a bit more common, that can mimic depression. I mean, not mimic. It can certainly make somebody depressed. It can mimic postpartum depression.
Hypo is low, right?
Yes, low thyroid.
Okay.
Hypo is low, yes. And so, again, sometimes women are treated with antidepressants and they're not getting, it might help them a little bit, but they're still depressed. Well, the psychiatrist that I work the closest with will sometimes, even if it's not showing up on a test, they will sometimes treat, I'm sorry?
I think a lot of times it does, and it's like subclinical, and
that's
so the
exactly
doctor keeps saying you're fine, and you know you're not
fine. Exactly.
So tell them how they could identify that.
Well, again, you know, if they are getting a little bit better, but it doesn't help them fully recover, the antidepressant, and if they're getting really good therapy and the sleep is getting on track and their nutrition, which I haven't even spoken about yet, but I'd love to, the nutrition and their support's doing well, but they're still just, they're just not themselves. Often that's an indication, and often the psychiatrist at that point will treat with a little bit of a thyroid medication. Often that boosts them from that 80 or 90% right to 100.
Would that work to use bioidentical hormones like progesterone?
Would progesterone help a thyroid condition?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, not. Someone out there, possibly with a stronger physio background than I, might say otherwise. But no, progesterone by itself, actually, progesterone you have to be really careful with, because the synthetic progesterones can actually make a woman more depressed. You have to be careful with those. I'm all for the bioidenticals and the natural progesterones. But no, there needs to be a direct thyroid treatment. It doesn't necessarily mean medication, but there needs to be a thyroid treatment. All the antidepressant in the world is not going to treat a thyroid condition. If there's an underlying thyroid problem, that needs to be addressed. Hyperthyroid, on the other end of this, can cause panic. It causes anxiety, so it can look much more like postpartum anxiety. So, again, there can be flip-flopping when the woman first delivers for the first couple of months. But between 2 to 3 months, if I had my way, Eva, every single postpartum woman, well, it would just be standard. You know, so many things are tested as a standard protocol, and here we have like 10%, you know, of women having a thyroid disorder. You'd think that would be a standard test, but it isn't as of yet.
I know you're not an MD, but are you familiar with any supplements or any kind of vitamins or minerals or any kind of alternative thing like that that somebody might check into?
Well, I'll tell you, if somebody is interested in a nutritional system that is just phenomenal, I have seen, it's really been nothing short of amazing what I've seen with this nutritional system. I am hesitating, Eva, to give that name because I don't want people to go rushing to a website and start ordering, because there are certain things that pregnant women cannot have and nursing mm-hmm. women cannot have. And I feel very protective mm-hmm. over pregnant and nursing moms. I would much rather they contact me and I would tell them precisely what they should be ordering and what they shouldn't, so they can certainly contact me. But there's a system that really gives, it's all organic. I use it myself, and it's really incredible. It's got all the omega-3s, which are very, very good. The fish oil, the fish, the marine lipids can actually help alleviate depression in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
It also has the sixes and the nines, the omega sixes and nines as well.
Mm-hmm.
Protein, wonderful protein that can be metabolized beautifully, and that helps keep the blood sugar nice and even.
Mm-hmm.
And I would suggest, if you don't have the system yet, you can nibble protein throughout the day, high-quality protein, which, when it keeps the blood sugar even, it also helps to keep the moods more even, so you're not all over the place and the blood sugar isn't dropping too low.
What do you consider high-quality protein?
What do I consider? Well, you know, I'm an organic food eater, but, you know, if somebody doesn't want to go that far, certainly poultry,
mm-hmm.
fish, eggs. I think those are probably the best, but, you know, meat,
peanut butter
if they're a meat eater. I'm sorry?
Peanut butter or cheese?
You know, peanut butter is certainly good. It's not what I would consider the highest form of protein,
okay.
But it's certainly better than not eating. And even, you know, almonds. And yeah, if it's high protein cheese, that can work well also. But to nibble like every 3 hours, like every time the baby eats, just put a little something in your mouth, and it can really help to keep the blood sugar even. I'm also a big believer in staying very well hydrated with water.
Oh, yes, I do too.
And, you know, even nutritionists don't tell us this sometimes, that, you know, we know how important water is for our physiology, you know, for our cells. But what often we're not told is how important water is for our mental health.
Clean water.
Absolutely, absolutely. There are water systems that are fantastic as purifiers. I'm not a big believer in tap water, but you know what? It's better to drink tap water than not to drink.
That's right, or to drink Diet Coke.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, we're not going to get into all the toxins, but that can really, really affect a woman's mental health big time. But water, let me put it this way, any dehydration at all will make anxiety worse. Often women with high anxiety postpartum, let's say they have a panic attack, which, you know, feels like you're having a heart attack sometimes. It can be really scary. Often those women show up in the emergency room thinking that it is a heart attack. And if there's a smart medical person on staff, often they hand the woman a couple of full glasses of water. That panic can dissipate right there.
Well, you know, it makes a lot of sense, because if you... water carries the electrical charge. Minerals hold it. If you don't have enough water, your autonomic nervous system is going to go crazy, and it's going to make you have palpitations, and you're going to think you're going crazy.
Again, it can exacerbate anxiety, absolutely.
So what do you recommend for the dosage of water a day?
Well, if I'd say certainly at least 8 glasses, but if she is breastfeeding, she's going to need more water, not just to keep her her milk supply up, but because she needs more water for her body because she's losing more fluids, I'm not going to give any. Typically, you know, we hear that half your body weight in ounces, but with postpartum women, often they really need more.
Yeah, I kind of think it's like close to. Some of the people I talk to say it's close to an ounce for every 2 pounds.
Okay.
The weight that you have.
Yeah, there are different things. But again, I don't want women to get, if overwhelm is already part of what's going on, I don't want them to start worrying about how many ounces. I just if you've got water bottles all over the house, you know, one by the changing table, one in the car, one in the living room where you sit and feed the baby, one in the, you know, then it will remind you to drink a lot. And if every 3 hours you're nibbling protein and you drink a glass of water, I'm not going to worry about you. You're going to have water. And nutrition, again, is so very important. So part of that wellness plan postpartum is who's going to bring food and what kind of food is it going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, when our serotonin is low, often we're craving sweets and carbs. And that's not great for us. Well, it's not great for anybody,
right.
But it can really make our blood sugar crash after it spikes, and that will affect our moods big time.
So what do you recommend? What kind of diet do you recommend for them?
Well, again, generally, nibbling the protein, staying hydrated, using omegas, complex carbohydrates, and I have a section in the book called Foods That Boost Mood, and I list a number of them in there with just making sure that the simple carbs like the white breads and the sugary cereals are avoided, and it's more, you know, the whole grains, the barley, the kasha, things like this are used whenever possible.
Okay. Tell them just a minute, because I know those omega-3s are important.
Mm-hmm.
Where are some places that they can get that? We have to assume that some of these people have no idea what we're talking about.
Okay, the omega-3, we're talking about essential fatty acids, and there's a tremendous amount of research about how protective omega-3s are, really, for everyone, for males and females and for our heart, not just our mental health. And there are some wonderful studies about how pregnant women would take up to 3 grams of omega-3 in the pregnancy. It not only protected her from depression in the pregnancy, but for up to many months following the delivery. And what we're thinking is that omega-3 is being, the woman's omega-3, while she's pregnant, is really being zapped by the baby. The baby's getting exactly what it needs to grow, but the woman is being depleted. And since our bodies don't make it by itself, if we don't use supplements, we're depleted. And one of the theories there is that the depleted omega-3 is adding to the depression. And I've seen some tremendous things happen. So regarding supplements, again, the system that I use has a tremendous, you know, it's got a wonderful omega-3 supplement you can add to that order. And it's contaminant-free. You have to be very careful that there isn't mercury in it, so it should say contaminant-free. I don't, offhand, Eva, I don't have any other brands. I mean, if you're hoping I would be mentioning brands,
no, I don't care about brands. I just wanted to give them an idea what you're talking about.
Yes, yes. So these are supplements one would find in a reputable health food store. If you're interested in what I use, you can certainly contact me. But they're very, very good for everyone.
So let's talk a minute about, we've mentioned the word suicidal ideation before. People don't take people serious sometimes when they say that word. You know, and sometimes people really are saying that word because they're hopeless.
Yes.
What are some, and sometimes the person themselves don't even realize where they're going.
Right.
How do you help people identify that, and what do you do about it?
Oh, well, that's a loaded question. Let's see if I can. Well, first of all, there's a difference between what I call an escapist fantasy and a real suicidal thought. Many women, especially just having had babies and feeling like they just lost their previous life and their previous self, and even without a depression, you know, we go through a whole big change in identity. And it can feel like we're grieving, you know, and if you don't set up regular breaks throughout the week for yourself, you can really feel lost in the shuffle, you know.
Not to mention being huge and fat and...
Oh, well, yeah, there's body image stuff going on. Our relationship with our partners have changed. Our relationship with ourselves have changed. You know, I remember one of my clients said to me, she goes, "Does this make me shallow? I traded in my little hot red Miata for a station wagon. Does that make me bad?" Because, you know, that hot little red Miata, really, the metaphor for herself, I mean, for that spontaneity, for that independent person. And I said, "No, of course not." You know, she, by the way, she got it back. She now uses it on the weekends. So an escapist fantasy is like, you know what, I just want to leave all my problems, get on a bus, and go to the other side of the country. You know, I just want to, or you know, having fantasies about just sort of escaping, just going somewhere and leave. That's not technically suicidal. Like, one can be very low and sad and even depressed having thoughts like that. But that's opposed to a real suicidal thought. With a suicidal thought, one is feeling like my life is over. Everyone around me, you know, they probably won't miss me too much. The pain is so bad and I don't see a way out. And they really have an intent to hurt themselves.
And they sometimes think that nobody will miss them because they're not cared about anyway.
That's right. That's what I meant. That, you know, I remember thinking at my lowest point, and I should tell you, Eva, I'm very grateful I'm still here. There were a couple of very scary touch-and-go times, and I decided at the last moment that I would stay because I had a job to do. It was a joyless job, you know, taking care of a baby and being a mom, I thought, at that time, but it was a job nonetheless, and I took my obligation seriously, and I stayed, and again, I feel very, very grateful. But yes, a person really feeling very hopeless, thinking that this is the rest of their life, and they have nothing to look forward to, and their life is over, and they're a burden to those around them, those women are in deep trouble.
So what do you do? If you're the woman, what do you do? And if you're the family member, what do you do?
Well, certainly, hopefully the woman will reach out to a health professional who she trusts. And again, and I hope that health professional knows where to get some specialized help. And most definitely, I have resources that I know of all over the country. So somebody can call me. They can either work with me directly, or I'll send them to someone, in their area, if there is one. Because this really is a specialized field. Not every therapist, even a good therapist, will know how to handle a postpartum depression. But certainly that woman needs help, and needs help fast. She needs some hope. She needs a plan of putting one foot in front of the other. She needs a very practical strategy. And she also needs a lot of support. So if I really am, if I feel I'm talking to a suicidal woman, a woman who is really ready to do something to harm herself, I will get a family member on that phone immediately. I'll just have her pass that phone over to someone, and I will, I won't mince words. I will say exactly what needs to happen. Do not leave her alone. You know, I have, you know, there's a plan that needs to be followed, until she can get some, get that plan in place.
Do all of the women usually feel comfortable saying that's the way they feel? I mean, what about the ones that hold it in that don't say anything? How would the family member know?
Well, certainly if she's calling me, she's not totally hopeless. You know, she's okay. Trying at least one last time and reaching out to somebody. She's just praying, understands what she's going through, or can lend her some help. So she might be hanging on by a thread. Mm-hmm. But if she calls me, I'm complimenting her up one side and down the other. Good for you, and you will get well. You're not going to be my first client that doesn't recover. Everybody so far has recovered with proper help from this illness, and you're going to get it too. I will get her family members, her support system, whoever they are. If they're not family members, then they could be a neighbor. It could be a friend. It could be a church member. But somebody, I help to get them involved so she's not alone, first of all. She's physically, there's somebody with her. If she needs medication to help her through that crisis, I make sure she's hooked up with a doctor. You know, so there are a number of people who are all on the same page who are surrounding her and giving her the support.
I think another thing that you ought to inform the people about is when women get this way,
yeah,
and in the middle of the night, their three-week-old has an ear infection, and that's screaming all night long. I mean, sometimes you get to the point where you want to sling it up against the wall. They need help. And somebody has to get up in the middle of the night.
Yes, and that's why I always concentrate on the sleep. That's top on my list, really, because she needs to be able to share. Somebody else needs to share the nighttime duty with her so she gets some solid sleep. The sleep deprivation is a huge factor. I mean, sleep should not be considered a luxury, even to new mothers. This is a medical necessity. And it changes brain chemistry. So she needs to know that she's got some hours that she's off duty. She can put in those earplugs. She can go in another room. She can turn on a white noise machine, you know, something making a shh noise so she's not disturbed and someone else is on duty. Another thing that really needs to be part of the plan is that she needs regular breaks. She needs a stay-at-home mom needs, are you ready for this? She needs about four times during the week for at least 2 hours each time.
Oh, I believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, another thing that my husband did, he thought because I was a stay-at-home mom, even though he never got up in the middle of the night, that I could still get up the next morning at 5 o'clock and do carpool.
Yeah.
Lost my mind.
See, often it's the myths of motherhood also, Eva, that get in the way. And the women themselves, you know, we sometimes have those myths that somehow we're going to be able to do it all. You know, that somehow we're given an extra capacity for no sleep. And,
right.
And sometimes we didn't even call it work. You know, like, well, I'm not working. My husband's working. Well, you absolutely are working. There's no job on the face of the planet that's harder than taking care of an infant.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You might not be paid for it, but you are working.
That's absolutely right. So let's start. We got just not too much longer. I want to touch on estrogen because it usually happens when you get pregnant, but it lasts for a long time, you know, and causes a lot of problems. So I want to talk about how people will know that they have some estrogen problems. And then I want you to tell us again where they can find you and how to contact you.
Sure.
What the name of the book is.
I'd be happy to. You know, I don't know how much specific physiological information I can offer regarding the estrogen. Typically during the pregnancy, the estrogen goes very, very high, so does progesterone. And that sometimes has a wonderful antidepressant effect on women. And at the very end of the pregnancy, the estrogen is at their very highest. That is what drops precipitously down to just about zero once the delivery occurs. So if you're, are you saying that you have heard women having too high of an estrogen causing them problems?
Estrogen dominance is a problem. You know, it causes breakouts on your skin. It causes depression. It causes uterine fibroids. It causes breast fibroids.
It certainly can. And again, again, I'm probably going to have to plead ignorance here, because what I know about the estrogen dominance is that sometimes it can be a problem in relation to the progesterone and the other glandular
issues.
Yeah, the
ratio there, yeah.
Yeah, so it's very hard to just take it, make it simplistic, and say that it's only an estrogen problem. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes
it's a new thing out there, too, that they're looking at. So
yes, I mean, again, as we speak, it's very exciting, even, mm-hmm. really. I mean, we are learning so much day by day. I'm following this literature, and I'm on all these sites, so I get all the information immediately hot off the press. So there's a tremendous amount we're learning about not only the individual hormones, but how they relate to each other, because often it's the relationship between them, not necessarily
exactly.
one being too high or too low. Does that make sense?
Yes. Have you read Michael Platt's book?
As a matter of fact, I have, yes.
That's kind of what I'm thinking about, that one and Ellen Cutler's work. So
yes.
I've been real impressed with both of those.
Very, very impressive stuff. And, absolutely. And I encourage folks, if they wanted to get in touch with me, if they have some questions for me, if they wanted to chat with me, they certainly can. They can reach me best through my website, drshosh.com, drshosh.com. If they wanted to just call me directly, it's 925-735-3099. And Postpartum Depression for Dummies has a whole chapter in there for alternative treatments, a very interesting study going on now that anyone can email me about or call me about.
Tell us about it quickly.
Sure. Real quickly, the participants in the study are wearing these glasses, kind of like goggles, that blocks blue light. The studies are showing that it's the blue component in light that causes the suppression of melatonin. So these glasses block blue light, and it's showing that the wearers are having tremendous results with making melatonin in a normal manner. So it is helping with sleep problems, such as insomnia. Incredible stuff. And we know we're onto something, Eva, because the pharmaceutical companies are very nervous.
Uh-huh.
Which I love, personally.
I do, too. So does it affect the melatonin if you take it by supplements, or it just affects that whatever you get from the sun or whatever?
Blocking the blue light. What women are doing is wearing these glasses 2 to 3 hours before they go to bed. That's it.
Really?
That's it. They take them off and go to sleep, and even the babies are sleeping better, the ones who are breastfeeding. It's pretty amazing stuff, and it's all, I mean, no bad side effects, only good ones. And, again, it's a double-blind study, so I don't know which goggles, which glasses the women are getting, but if you're interested, you can absolutely contact me, or if you just wanted to buy a pair that seems to be working the best, you can go to sleepglasses.com, and you can just get a pair. But if you want to be part of the study, you'll get them free, so you can contact me, and I'll be very, very happy to help you be a participant if you're a postpartum woman.
So wouldn't that help anybody?
You bet. You bet. I'm just talking about the particular study that I'm involved with. But yes, this is good for anyone. It even has a money back guarantee. I mean, it's pretty incredible stuff.
Okay, what would be considered postpartum? How long after you have a baby?
A year.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, so if they've had a baby and it's been less than a year, they can participate in this study.
Absolutely.
And who's conducting the study, you and who?
Well, the researchers are out of John Carroll University in Cleveland.
Okay.
Very reputable folks, yes.
And what department is it that's doing it? Psychiatry?
No, it's not. That would actually take me a while to describe, you know, who they are and how they've gotten together. They're from various departments, as a matter of fact. But I'd be very happy to discuss with participants if they're interested as to who is behind the study. These are wonderful folks that have been doing research for many, many years through John Carroll.
Okay. I'd kind of be interested. Send me some information about that.
Sure.
Might interview them on my show about that. That's
absolutely, yeah.
So many people have sleep problems due to EMF fills and stuff, which change your melatonin.
That's right.
Does change your melatonin, so that might be good for them. Okay, you've got about 3 or 4 minutes. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about that you think we've missed or that you'd like to cover.
Well, okay. I want to make sure that women know that if they are not feeling like themselves, they're pregnant, or if they've had a baby recently within the last year and they're just not feeling like themselves, please don't suffer in silence. No shame should be attached to these disorders. This is physiological. Chemistry has changed, and no more shameful than gestational diabetes or anything other very common perinatal experience. So please reach out and get some help. You can call me. You can email me. You can go to postpartum.net, even, the Postpartum Support International website. But don't suffer in silence. Your family needs you to be well, and you deserve to be happy. So, and this is very treatable. Very treatable. It goes away. The great news is that it goes away with proper help, and I'd be so happy to be part of that if you'd like me to.
Touch one more time on your support group and how they can contact that.
Sure. Well, I oversee many of the support groups now. I've trained other therapists to run support groups. There's also an online support group. So anyone who's interested in knowing what support group might be in their geographic area, they can go to postpartum.net, and they will actually see a list of the groups already formed. If they wanted to just be hooked up with other women throughout the country who are feeling the way they are, they can contact me, and I can put them in touch with people either online or by phone.
Okay, great. You've been great. Your book's worth reading for anybody that has this problem. It's easy to understand. It's laid out in an intelligent, easy-to-read format. So,
thank you so much.
Depression for Dummies. Thanks so much, Shoshana, and come back sometime.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Sure. Good night, dear.
Bye-bye.